Welcome to Bench Boost, presented by Ivy Ignite, Inorganic Ventures Virtual ICP Academy. I'm your host, Mike Booth, Technical Director here at Inorganic Ventures. At Ivy, we're passionate about all things ICP, sample prep, and analytical science, and we're here to share our passion and expertise with you. Each week, we'll bring you the latest insights, tips, and tricks from the brilliant minds of our laboratory team. Get ready to experience chemistry in a new light. Hello, everyone. Today, I'm joined by one of our tech support chemists, Ashley Jones, one of our production managers, Joey Burns, and one of our R&D chemists, Autumn Phillips. Today, we're going to continue a comprehensive review of another one of our most popular resources, our Trace Analysis Guide, written by our founder, Dr. Paul Gaines. Be sure to check out earlier episodes of Bench Boost to hear our team's thoughts on previous chapters from this guide and a complete review of each chapter of our ICP Operations Guide. Today, our team will be discussing Chapter 11 of the Trace Analysis Guide on acid digestions of inorganic samples. If you'd like to follow along with us, then you can view the Trace Analysis Guide on our website at www.inorganicventures.com. All right, so we use acid digestions to make all of our single element concentrates. And Autumn, you did that job for a long time. Maybe not a long time, but
I'm sure it felt like a long time.
Yeah.
No, it was a fun time.
So I think you might be the best person to kick this conversation off. Could you describe what we call our bulk manufacturing process here at Ivy?
Yeah, so basically what bulk manufacturing is, we take a starting material, so some sort of solid, whether it be a metal, an oxide, or some form of a salt, and we get that into solution at a high concentration. And so we make what we call affectionately our big gun conchs, where the final solution is around like 50 to 100,000 ppm. So pretty concentrated, but most of the time it's a metal, and we just throw it into solution with an acid, whether it's concentrated acid. Sometimes it's a one-to-one mix of nitric or hydrochloric acid, and that metal reacts into solution, and then you get a really concentrated, nice, clear, beautiful solution. Sometimes they're clear, sometimes they're colorful, just depending on what the metal is. And we focus on high purity starting materials, so we do full TMI analysis on those to make sure that they are of sufficient purity, so that we can make really pure, high-quality standards.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that process takes a lot. Do you ever run into any issues with just solubility with making concentrations that high?
Yeah. So sometimes if you're reacting it, especially if you're heating it and you're boiling off a lot of the water, you can form just a salt. The nitrate usually is what it precipitates as, like copper. We make a really high concentration of copper solution. So if you boil off too much of that water and you let it cool down, a lot of times you'll get the salt, but luckily all nitrates are soluble, so it's not an issue with that. As long as you know you have a nitrate, it's going to be soluble even in just water. But yeah, there are definitely some safety concerns for some of these reactions. They get pretty hot, especially if you're heating them in a concentrated acid solution, and you're adding something with a lot of surface area, like a powdered metal. You definitely have to be careful with some reactions going a little bit out of control. So you gotta be careful with the way that you're heating them and how much you're adding to make sure that you're keeping those well controlled.
And Joey, we wouldn't know anything about reactions going out of control, right?
We've never made volcanoes here with, you know, acid and iron just going everywhere.
Yeah, especially, so sometimes you have to add an additional oxidizing agent too. So I think we'll talk about that a little bit more. But for some of the reactions, they require a peroxide to be added to fully oxidize the starting material to get the analyte into solution. And so those have to be, you have to use an extra level of caution, because if you have a concentrated area of peroxide, you can form explosives, and that is never the goal. At least we hope not.
And not the fun volcano style explosive. No.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, not the fun kind of explosion, if there is such a thing.
Oh, Autumn, you mentioned, you know, the nitrate salts being soluble. I think that was interesting because Paul, in this chapter, he really talked almost exclusively about nitric acid. So, Ashley, can you run us through some of the highlights that he wrote about nitric acid?
Yeah. So I'm sure a lot of you listening are aware that nitric acid is an incredibly popular acid to use for inorganics. It's usually, when we're talking about digestions, you'll see it often used in conjunction with other acids. This is partly because nitrate is a poor ligand, which just means that The coordination ability is not sufficient to prevent hydrolysis, where the water molecule is going to come in and break those chemical bonds that we're trying to form. So using other acids can kind of help us control that a little bit. But the complicating factor with some of those acids is that things like sulfate, hydrochloric, hydrofluoric acids will form insoluble compounds. So if that occurs, you know, we're again working against ourselves. So we kind of have to be careful about, you know, what we add with it in order to achieve some of these digestions. HF is very powerful when it comes to getting things into solution, but it can also really, really work against you. So nitrate tends to be the way to go, partially also, as Autumn mentioned, because it's so soluble and it's easy to work with. And then we also have to take into account that oxidizing ability and how concentrated your acid's going to be if you're using nitrate. So the oxidizing ability naturally is going to decrease as the concentration of acid decreases. And generally under about 2 molar, we're not going to have much oxidizing ability left, but you'll still want to be careful if you're working with things that contain like osmium, for example, because that can form volatile compounds that are going to be pretty dangerous. So we'll talk about organics, digestions and stuff in the next episode, I believe, but the nitric acid is great for everything until we get to our organics, and then it's not going to be quite strong enough as an oxidizer to convert those organic molecules.
Yeah. And I think this is something, I know we were talking about earlier, but nitric acid can fume at the right concentrations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So generally when we talk about nitric acid, it's going to be 67-ish, between 65 and 69%. Anything above that, 69.2% is what we have here, is going to be fuming nitric acid. So, I mean, again, anytime you're working with any concentrated chemicals, you want to be careful, but the more you're going to lose, the more you're going to lose. So we want to be careful with your air quality and things like that. Make sure you're working in a hood just in case you create a volcano and do you have excess fuming, things like that.
Great. Joey, Paul listed some general digestion methods, and, you know, looking through this, it's like, oh yeah, that's where we got a lot of our work instructions from, is, mm-hmm. you know, he's translated a lot of this, a lot of the bulk work instructions in a very short list. Could you run us through some of the highlights of these general methods?
Sure. One that's near and dear to my heart, because this was my first major solo project while working here, is the, for lanthanides and rare earth metals specifically, for lanthanides, you're going to want to add about 10 to 15% nitric acid to dissolve. Basically, what you're looking at is a molar equivalent. Mm-hmm. So a 6 moles nitric acid per mole of metal will get it into solution, but you're going to want to add a little bit extra to keep it there. Mm-hmm. Also considering that when you do the reaction, you will lose some NOx just to the atmosphere, just the nature of the beast. Autumn mentioned earlier about how when you're using fine material or things with proportionally large surface areas, so your granules, you're going to want to be very careful if you add them to straight nitric acid. Mm-hmm. It's for metal powders, it's a good idea to make a slurry. Mm-hmm. That helps prevent you from accidentally adding too much at once, but also it'll help control the reaction once it gets going.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul explicitly mentions the 1 part nitric acid to 3 parts hydrochloric acid to get your precious metals in, some steels, and some various alloys. A thing I have learned personally outside of work is that different alloys of steel react differently to acids. So just because one steel alloy reacts well to a specific combination of acids does not mean every alloy of steel is going to react equally. That's how we get modern Damascus steel.
Uh-huh. Very cool. So you do a lot of metalworking, right?
I do. Yeah. As I was mentioning, I have some experience making knives.
Nice.
So I have nice homemade kitchen knife set.
Wow. Awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah. All the cool things you learn from chemistry can just be brought right outside of the lab sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you see the world through a different view. All right. Well, I think other than that, I mean, Paul mentioned a couple other methods, you know, using HF. You always want to make sure that you're practicing proper safety technique. Mm-hmm. We're using HF for acid digestions. I'll let anyone sort of speak to that. I think we've probably mentioned it before, but it's mm-hmm. always good to hear what someone should do if they run into an HF incident.
Yeah, HF is... as lab safety role, it is the bane of my existence just because I know we have a lot of labs that just cannot accept it and will not work with it. But it is really good at doing what it does. So there is some use for it. There is some need. We have some elements that are just not going to be stable without it. There's no way really to get them in solution in an acidic environment without HF. So if you're working with it and you're concerned, you know, always just good rule of thumb, use the least amount of acid necessary. Don't try to speed up your reaction by adding more. You're going to put yourself in a world of hurt. If you were to be exposed to it, use calcium gluconate, make sure that you treat it quickly. But again, just as we're working with concentrated acids in general, good lab practices and PPE and hoods and those kinds of things should be sufficient, as long as you're careful and you know what you're working with and you have your safety equipment on hand in case you were to need it. There shouldn't be a concern there.
Awesome.
Yeah, that last digestion method, the 1:1:1 nitric, HF, and water that Paul mentions in the guide, that one's a really good starting place. If you know that your sample has elements that need HF for solubility, something like titanium, zirconium, silica, if you're in an acidic matrix, like Ashley mentioned, you're going to need HF. Tungsten needs a greater amount of HF. Mm-hmm. That 1:1:1 nitric, HF, and water, it's really good at digesting a lot of really difficult sample types. So that's where I would start if you're just really having trouble getting something into solution. Maybe not as much HF as that, maybe lower the amount of HF to begin with, but it's a good starting point that we found for some of our more difficult samples.
All right. Well, if we didn't mention the sample type that you're working on, I would definitely recommend you check out the IV website. We have a lot of sample prep guides available, which gives a lot of very detailed information about how to get certain sample types in the solution. They are sorted by element. And then if you want a quick reference, check out our interactive periodic table. Whenever you click on the element, it'll bring up a shortened list of some of the sample prep methods that you can use. But again, you can always check out the full sample prep guide if you want more details. So before we close this one off, does anyone have anything else they want to mention about the digestion of inorganic samples?
I would say if you're working with zeolites and you need to digest them and you don't want to use HF, check out our UA-UNS method that's also on the website. That's a good way to sort of get around having to work with some really nasty acids, and it works pretty quickly. So,
perfect. All right. We hope you found this conversation helpful. If you have any questions, then please contact us at ivignite@inorganicventures.com. Ignite membership provides you with unlimited access to video courses, downloadable resources, community forums, and so much more. Join us next week as we review Chapter 12 of the Trace Analysis Guide, where our team will discuss acid digestions of organic samples. We hope you'll join us then and have a fantastic week.